We're getting to the final couple chapters, so I hope you guys have learned a lot. Of course, a great comment by the woman who won that Alaska trip, you know, do whatever it takes no matter what, and that's part of what we learned from some of the other chapters in Peter Hirsch's book. It's kind of like that no matter what, it's that has to do with commitment, you know, and his chapter today has to do with desire. It's like living with passion, secret, one of the 10 simple secrets that guarantee success is desire. And his quote, I'm going to put you on mute because we got so much background noise. Okay, hopefully we got mute working so we cut out all the background noise. Anyway, we look at desire. Ignore what a man desires and you ignore the very source of his power. I think it's a great quote by Walter Lippmann. We started off the chapter. That's how Peter Hirsch starts off his chapter. That's how I started off the outline today. So we're talking about desire, and it's in the first thing he talks about is the way to get something is to really want it. You got to have the desire, otherwise it doesn't matter. And we get into looking at the kind of desires that we have in our life, and some of you can look at things that you want in your life and you go, well, I kind of want that, or I sort of want it, or I halfway want it, or we tend to buffer the language about what we want in our life. And you can ask people, and sometimes in network marketing, one of the approaches people take when they look at somebody for doing the business, they'll say, what do you want most in your life? And they make people start, because it really forces you to start dreaming about what your life should look like. So what do you want? You know, what's lacking in your life? What do you want more of in your life that you don't have today? I love that saying. In fact, that comes out on my business DVD that I do, Why This Is the Best Business in This Century. And it says, what do you want more of in your life? And it makes people think about what's lacking in their life. What are they lacking in security? Do they want more finances? Do they want a bigger house? Do they want kids? Do they want more security? What is it that's lacking in their life? Do they want a stronger spiritual life? That really causes you to analyze what's lacking in your life or what you would like more of. So, but a lot of us use language like, well, I kind of want it, I sort of want it. And I'm going to ask the question, why is it that we take the position we sort of want to be presidential in Manitech? Because when I ask people and they go, yeah, Mary Jo, I want to be presidential, I said, do you really want it? And they go, well, kind of. And I go, what do you mean kind of? How do you kind of want something? When you start hearing language like kind of, sort of, what you're doing is you're just buffering yourself. You're getting into that whole concept of try. You're getting into the concept of if it doesn't work out, it's okay. You're starting to already fall back on 10 reasons why it's not going to work out. You're letting that little voice in your head control your heart and your passion. And you can't let that happen or you'll never develop passion because you're never going to really desire something. You're going to let other things get in the way, clog up the stream of that incredible heart each one of you have in your body to just drive you to create things in your life, the passion that we're fighting to have for things that we want in our life. So, but why is it we take the position that we sort of want to be presidential in Manitech? Number one, a lot of people say, I don't want to be disappointed if I don't get there. Oh, great. So instead of putting myself out and saying, I'm going to create this and make this happen because I want it, we rather just buffer ourselves about failure. We want to put ourselves in a position that it's okay if we fail to make something. So we don't want to use the word failure because, you know, if we said, well, we really never wanted it, we really never put a full commitment behind it, then we don't have to look at that we didn't make it. You're buffering for failure. You create, your whole languaging is what creates failure in your life. So quit creating failure before you even get started out of the box. So the second thing that holds us back some time to really commit to being presidential in Manitech and really want it and tell people, hey, it's a desire of my life, I want to be presidential in Manitech, is that there are other things in your life that conflict with it. So you have things that, you know, that, well, maybe that's not what God wants for me in my life, maybe it's not, you know, it's not, I can't be a good mom and be a good Manitech presidential, or maybe, you know, in order to be a presidential, I need to be more organized and I love my freedom more than I love being presidential, so it's more important for me to stay disorganized. I mean, trust me, this language comes out of people's mouths. And even if it doesn't come out of people's mouths, it's what's inside of them. So you look at some of these things that are causing you and holding you back from making a commitment or saying, I want to be presidential. And then there's the famous one that you are a person that wants to want to. I'm wanting to want to. Ever hear that language? And it's kind of like they're imposters. They want to the most, and it really is a debilitating and limiting position that we take. It's a program running our life. I really want to Mary Jo, but I really want to be president. I want to be presidential, but, and you look at the but and you say, okay, what's the but all about? Well, wanting to want to, I gave you a whole list, and these really come out of Peter Hirsch's book. He says those people who want to are really expressing something else. They're expressing, they're expressing avoidance. I want to, but you're avoiding it. You're avoiding making a commitment. You're avoiding making a statement. Number two, you're holding back. There's something inside of you that holds back. You don't want to put all your guts into it. You really don't want to move forward. You don't want to, because maybe you put all your guts into something when you were 7 years old and it didn't work out for you. So now, you know what? You're never going to do that again. Well, what kind of losing proposition is that all about? And why does your past ever predict your future? Don't let your past predict your future. Believe in anything as possible as I do and create the possibility. So don't let don't use that as an excuse and hold yourself back. The fear of the unknown, that's a third thing that causes people to want to do things. I'm wanting to want to be presidential, Mary Jo, but, you know, I don't know what that looks like. I have a fear of what it might take. I have a fear of being successful, fearing of the unknown. I've never done it before. My goodness gracious, what is this fear about? Is it a fear that if you were making $6,000 or $10,000 or $12,000 a period in Manitech, does that scare you? Does it scare you that you couldn't be a good steward or be responsible with the money that's out there for you to have? I mean, what's the fear? Is it a fear that you wouldn't be able to enjoy yourself in Maui on January? I don't think most people think they could enjoy themselves on a free, all-expenses-paid trip to Maui or to Hawaii, some island in Hawaii every January. So what is this fear of the unknown? That you have to show up differently? I don't, you know, maybe you may step into more leadership role. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? Would you like to become a better leader? Most people would love to do that. Oh my gosh, more responsibility. I don't know. Responsibility is just a word that means able to respond. Wouldn't you like to put yourself in a position that you had a greater ability to respond? Leadership is a wonderful role to play. We all need to be leaders. So just this fear of the unknown that causes us to want to be presidential instead of really desire. Sometimes we choose that language because it's confusing aspiration with wishful thinking. In other words, you know, we wish instead of we want. There's a major difference between those two things. You know, wishing is just wishful thinking, and it's just on a whim, and we have no expectation around it. Wanting it puts it at a level of expectation. So we don't confuse those two things. So don't get into wishful thinking, because when you, I wish I could be presidential. Is that going to get you or motivate you to get there? Absolutely not. It's wanting it, committing to it. That's what's going to move you forward. Fear of failure is one. We talked a little bit about that. That's part of the fear of the unknown. Some people fear of the failure, fear of the, you know, that's a tough thing. And why do you fear failure? Because you had it sometime in your life in the past? So you have a fear of failure. I don't fear failure. Failure to me, and mistakes to me, are just, you know, steps in a direction to correct my direction. It's just a mechanism to allow me to fine-tune the direction I'm taking in my life. So, and there is no failure in getting the presidential. In reality, everybody can get there. Every one of you can make presidential in Manitech. There's no doubt in my mind, not a doubt. But will it take change? Absolutely. It took change for me to get the presidential. It'll take change for you. But change is a beautiful thing. And I think so many of us fear change. Somehow we wallow in this comfort zone and we think we're happy there when really everything we want is outside the comfort zone. But we'd have to change in order to go outside that comfort zone. So you know what? It's easier not to change than it is to change. So we choose to maintain status quo. Horrible thing. Because status quo doesn't really exist. You're either green and growing or you're ripe and rotting. You're going in one direction or the other. So do you want to grow? If you want to grow, you're going to want to change. You're going to desire something different. You're going to desire to be better. You're going to desire to create different things in your life. You're going to desire to play a bigger game. That's how you get over that fear of failure stuff. Throw it out the window. It's not possible. You will not fail. You will succeed. Start believing in yourself. And then the wanting to want to, well, I want to be presidential. It's a form of procrastination that allows the person to look good in the process of doing nothing productive. Whoa, We got a lot of those out there. I keep telling everybody I want to be presidential, but, you know, it makes me look good. I stand up and say, hey, I want to be presidential. You're wanting to want to be presidential. So you keep busy in the business, but you're procrastinating doing what it takes to get there. How many people know exactly what it takes to get the presidential? I think all of you do. The number one thing is prospecting. It's out sharing. It's sharing and educating people in the world about this incredible breakthrough technology that's making so many difference in people's lives. And that's the number one thing we have to do if we get to get the presidential. And why don't we do it? Well, we procrastinate. We put it off. We keep busy with other things. But I sure look good in the process when I tell people I want to be presidential, because then they get the idea that that's what I'm working on, but I'm really procrastinating on doing what I need to do. So get out of procrastination. It's holding you back. It's destroying your effectiveness. It's holding you back and making you be less, you know, creative and effective than you could be and serving the purposes that you're here to serve. So get out. If you're one of these wanting to want to. You're living in a lie, you're living in some falsehood, and you want to release it, you want to get out of it, you want to break down whatever that barrier is that's holding you to that, and quit using the language, because language is incredibly powerful in your life. So just make the commitment, say, I want to be presidential. Boom. Really step into that statement instead of being a want. We don't want to do that. Okay, so let's look at the creative force of desire. When you desire something, there's an incredible creative force that comes with desire. And as Hirsch says it, he says, desire has no color of its own. As always, it's up to each one of us individually. So if you sit back and you desire things, and you sit back and, oh, I desire to have millions of dollars, and I desire to do this, and I desire... When you start getting way over what you desire in terms of what might be appropriate for you or might be greater than what you deserve, then you're starting to get into an area of greed, and that's how he defines it. Peter Hirsch defines it, that we can start putting ourselves in the area of greed instead of just desire. So watch what you desire for in the terms of overwhelming. The other thing you look at desire for is if you start desiring for less. Some of you sit back, and I work with people, and they go, well, Mary Jo, I just signed up in Manatech, and by... a year from now, I want to be regional director. Well, what's that all about? So you think in 1 year, you're only going to have 15 people in your organization ordering the products. I think you can do a lot better than that. But why do we sell ourselves short? Well, a lot of times we put desires in our life that we take these little itty-bitty bites of desires. Like, I desire to sign up one person in the next 3 months. Well, geez, way to step out there. And what that comes from is it comes from a reflection of our own lack of self-confidence or lack of self-worth or self-esteem. We just have self-esteem or self-worth problems, and we got to get over that too. So you can see how getting your desires to be overwhelming or getting them to be shortchange you both have negativity associated with them. So let's look at some authors out there and look at some other ideas around desire and what desire really means. And one of the people that Peter Hirsch quotes in his book is Emmett Fox. He's a Christian metaphysician, and he wrote the book Make Your Life Worthwhile. Make Your Life Worthwhile. It came out in 1946, so it's quite old. But in that book, he said the following, that when you really desire to be or to do something, when you really desire it, it becomes part of your heart, in other words. It is a sign that God wants you to do that thing and that he has signified his desire by giving you the necessary faculty. A lot of you know biblical scripture and you say, you know, that, you know, ask and God will give you the desires of your heart. And when we dig deep into that concept, we know that he's not saying that, you know, if you desire a house three times as big as one you have and you desire seven cars and to, you know, that's not what the Bible's really talking about, because once you commit your life to Christ, of course, we know the Holy Spirit invests in all of us, and we come from a different heart. It actually changes your heart. It changes the direction of your life so that in such a way that your requests and your desires of your heart really are convicted on other things. And so the desires become something different than that. But it is, as Emmett Fox says, is that that desire is a sign of what God has put into your heart. The desire comes from your heart, and it's what God has put in your heart. And he will give you the necessary faculties. That's why he says the desires of your heart will come true, because whatever he puts in as a desire of your heart, he's going to give you everything it takes to make that happen. because anything is possible through him. So it's a huge statement that we look at what is the desire of our heart, and the Lord's going to give you the faculties to create that. And the other thing he says in his book, he says, given the desire and the developed faculty, there is no need to look for opportunity because the door will automatically open. So what he's talking about is he's saying that desire in and of itself, the pure concept of a deep-seated, heartfelt desire in your life creates energy and creates opportunities and creates mechanisms that will occur in your life to allow the desire to come to fruition. So inherently, in and of itself, desire has that energy force behind it. Another author Peter Hirsch reflects in this part of the chapter is Robert Fritz. And some of you have heard me do some trainings around Fritz because he wrote the book Your Life as Art. It's one of my, one of the books that I've read and really enjoyed. He gave me a lot of insight into human nature around it. It was just a very enjoyable book. And he also wrote a book, one of his older ones, is called The Path of Least Resistance. Your Life as Art, I think, has only been out for a few years. Path of Least Resistance is quite a bit older. But what he talks about in his book, The Path of Least Resistance, he talks about when you have a desire for something in your life, it is always something different than what you have today. Because clearly that's why you desire it. If you already had it in your life, you wouldn't desire it. So let's say you set a goal to be something. You could take even a Manatech position. You say, I desire to be executive director by December of 2006. That's a desire in your life. I want to be that. I'm desiring that. I'm making a commitment to be that, right? Well, it's different from where you are today on May 22nd. You might just be a national director today, but your desire is that you're going to be executive director by December 2006. Now, when you put these two elements together, where you are today, your reality today, and you look at where you want to be December 2006, you immediately create tension between the two positions because they're two different positions. So there's immediate, what he calls structural tension between the two of them. As long as you're honest, some of us have a problem with honesty around our current realities. And that's a real problem because if you're not honest with yourself of where you are today, whether it's about a beingness issue or it's about where you are with your family life or your business life or whatever it is, whatever that issue is around beingness or whatever, you have this issue that exists today that you got to be real with yourself and be honest with yourself, or you can never create the structural tension that Fritz talks about. And this structural tension is imperative to create in your life. Because it's the structural tension that will cause you to change. It's the structural tension that builds up the result that you can move in a direction to create something new in your life. But you have to have a reality check at the get-go about where you are today. And you also need to be real about where you're going. You can't say, I'm going to be presidential in 3 months. Well, you can say that. You can want that. But is it realistic? When only less than 0.01% of all Manatech associates ever did that, which puts it down into such a fine-tuned number that it's not something you should even reflect as a possibility for most of us. I don't even discuss that. I, in fact, talk to most people when they are anxious and to really get up and go on, and they say, Mary Jo, I'm going to put all my time into this. I'm going to get the presidential as fast as possible. I put them on a 2-year plan. That's how I operate because I think that's more realistic. And I have still yet in my organization to break anyone into president. Oh, I shouldn't say that. I did break one person into presidential in 6 months, so we did that. But she was a very particular person. She was ran a health food store. So when you get into positions where you have people that have phenomenal sets of contacts and can move forward in a quicker way, then it's a different scenario. But how many of in Manatech run health food stores? Not a lot of us. So we don't have that immediate downline that all we have to do is go and suggest to 600 people and get them started on Ambertose. And guess what? You're presidential. We don't have that most of us don't have that position that we're in to take advantage of a situation like that. So do something that's real. Put your desire needs to be reality. I mean, it needs to be, you have to look at it and say, not your reality today, but it has to be something that's a doable, attainable. So you're not getting too far out on yourself to create a tension that is surrealistic. So again, be honest with where you are today. Be honest with where you want to be, the desire and that desire that you set or that goal that you set for whatever period of time it is, and create that structural tension. Now, what he describes in the book, which I think is a great way of looking at it, is if you took a rubber band and you held the rubber band between two of your hands and you stretched that rubber band between the two of your hands. One of those hands represents the goal that you've set, where you want to be, your desire, and the other hand represents your current reality. And you can feel the tension and the pressure of that rubber band stretched between them. And that's what he's talking about, the same tension and stress that we can put in our lives between our goal we set and where we are today. And the reality of it is a lot of you hate stress and you hate tension. So you're going to want to immediately release that because you don't like to live. That's something about you that, that makes me feel uncomfortable. So you want to release it. It's true about people who don't like to set goals. They don't like to put desires out there because I don't want to put pressure on myself. Well, excuse me. Tension is necessary in our life to help us move forward. So what happens is we release the rubber band that's holding our goal, and what have we just done? Will that release the tension? Absolutely. It will get rid of the tension. But the result will be it'll maintain your status quo. That rubber band will droop from the hand that is your status quo, and now you'll stay in status quo. You'll be giving up on your dreams. You'll be forfeiting those dreams because you're creating no tension to help affect change in your life to get to where you need to go. But if you maintain the tension, you say, okay, Mary Jo, I'm not letting go of that rubber band. I'm not letting go of my dream. Now that tension is going to force change to occur because tension always, always seeks resolution. Tension always seeks resolution. So your current reality will be forced to change. And as long as you commit and you put focus together, if you go back and you look at all the 10 secrets that we talked about in Peter Hirsch's book over the last couple of months, and you apply those principles towards that change, and you apply them, you're going to have incredibly accelerated change in your life to reach that goal or that desire that you've committed to. This tension is a powerful creative force in our life, and we use that tension. We create the tension. That's the whole purpose of setting goals and setting desires out there, is to create the tension, which is a powerful creative force for us to get a desired result. Okay, so that I think it's a great analogy with that rubber band. It just helped me really look at it in a different way, and hopefully it gave you some insight into how to look at your life and what are you doing. What rubber band are you stretching today, and what are you putting in the other hand, holding that rubber band? And how firm are you implanted and holding on to that with your life? It's kind of what the woman said today about, I made the trip, Mary Jo. You taught us no matter what. Well, you're going to hang on to that rubber band with that other hand no matter what. You're getting the commitment behind the desire, living with that tension in your life because you acknowledge that tension is a creative force in your life. It's going to help promote change, which is going to get you what you want in life. Okay, so great analogy, great information to help you support yourself in putting yourself out there and in planting desire in your life. Once you've established desire, what you want in life, what is that desire in your life, now the next step is to communicate it to everyone. You supercharge the entire process by surrounding yourself with people who are kind of like mind, who support you in your desire. It's kind of like creating a supportive environment. Is everybody familiar with that? The synergy that exists when you create a supportive environment. So you want to transfer this information to other people. Don't hold it within yourself. Your dream shouldn't be something that only you know about. Your dreams need to be what other people know about you. Like some of you say, oh, Mary Jo, I have a dream that someday I want to have open an orphanage. And I love it when people tell me that stuff. I just really drive them. I ask them tons of questions. What does it look like? Let's draw a picture of it if you want. And they go, I don't know what it looks like. I go, no, but let's draw a picture of it. If you could picture and visualize it today, what would it look like? I love working with people on visualizations. It becomes more real to people. And we need to support people in their dreams that they come up with and their desires, their heart. And that's what happens when you share it with other people. You get that incredible supportive background. You have people jumping on the bandwagon with you, really supporting you and getting done what needs to get done to get there. I love supporting people and meeting their dreams and creating newness in their life and creating, whatever mechanism they've chosen to impact lives around the world. What a great effort. What a great energy that is to be able to put your energy behind their energy and support them. One of the first steps you've got to do, though, in getting people to support you behind you is you really have to build rapport with them. because rapport is important. If you just go out and you start screaming from rooftops about your desire for your life, that's not going to exactly have everybody jumping on the bandwagon. They don't know who you are. They might look at you as some lunatic at the top of a mountain screaming off your lungs or on the top of your rooftop, whatever you're doing. So you want to make sure you build rapport. And Peter Hirsch goes into a big area in this chapter about building rapport, how to build rapport with people so that you can be part of their desires in their life and support them, as well as having them be instrumental in being a support network for your desires in your life. And the first thing that you need to do in building rapport is to get these warriors in your camp is you have to transfer your beliefs to the others in three ways. And he talks about words, voice inflection, body language. These three form the skill we call building rapport. And when you look at these, I put the quote in here that when you have mastered the skill of establishing rapport with unlimited numbers of people, notice the language, and this is so true with network marketing. When you've mastered the skill of establishing rapport with unlimited numbers of people, you have created literally infinite variety of avenues for the experience and expression of joy, happiness, and success in your life and your work. Huge. When you've mastered the skill of establishing rapport with unlimited numbers of people, you have created literally infinite variety of avenues for the experience and expression of joy, happiness, and success in your life and your work. So our goal should be to establish rapport with unlimited numbers of people. One thing that you got to knock down right out of the box when you read that language is judgment. You got to get rid of judgment. You got to get rid of it because judgment's holding you back from having the rapport that you would desperately want to have with people. But rapport simply means establishing some commonality, you know, some level of commonality and comfort possible as much as you can, comfort and commonality in a relationship as you possibly can. That's what helps build rapport. And one of the things he says in realizing how to build rapport, we need to first look at what's important. And he quoted a study that came out of Pacific Institute in Seattle, and I've seen some of these studies quoted other times, that this one happened to say that 93% of our communication is nonverbal. I've heard it as, you know, some people say 85% of what you communicate comes from body language and other things versus the words you actually say. So I've heard that from other sources. I have never had I suspect you could go on the internet and look up Pacific Institute in Seattle. They did a study a number of years ago, and that's what he quoted, but he didn't give me any greater reference than that, where they concluded that only 7% of our communication between ourselves and another person has to do with the words that are actually spoken, the content of what we say. You know, and again, I've heard it many different ways. Sometimes 85% is what matters. Only 15% is words, or 10%. This one went down as low as 7% is what the words we actually say. So that's a big aha for a lot of you out there who say, I need to know more before I start sharing. Well, that's telling you that people don't care how much you say, what's the content of the words. They're going to read you, and you're going to build rapport with them through all the other communication devices that we know about. So if that is true, the analysis that Hirsch goes through in the book talks about our critical importance of being able to mirror or match people. And what is that all about, mirroring and matching? If you don't understand this concept, I highly suggest you either get Hirsch's book or get a good book that's on mirroring and matching, because it really has a lot to do with how we interact with another person. You know, we talk about personality quadrants, so we understand where people are coming for, what runs their life, and that really tells us a lot about where they're coming from, what their core values are, things that are important to them, you know, so that we can be better, play ball in their quadrant instead of always playing ball in our quadrant, which will help build more rapport because we have a greater understanding for why they are the way they are. Critical in marriage, too, by the way. My husband's a severe analyst, and I'm a heavy promoter, and the two of us are in opposite quadrants, and if I didn't come to the realization of some of the concepts that run his life as an analyst, I would spend my days always frustrated with him. But I understand it, and I kind of smile, and I get it. I get why he does some of the things he does. They seem insane to me, but, you know, he's a different guy. He comes from a different quadrant, it's no judgment around it. But if you don't understand that, you're going to get very judgmental, and we tend to try to fix everybody or change them. Wrong approach to life. The only person you can change or you can fix is who? You. So quit trying to fix and change other people. So what we do with mirroring and matching isn't trying to change anyone. What it is our willingness to take a different approach in communication with people based on their methods of communication and their styles. So let's talk a little bit about mirroring and matching. The two most important areas are voice and body language. So let's look at those. First of all, your voice. And in Hirsch's book, he says your voice inflection comprises 38% of your communication with others. So he gives 38% to voice and 55% to body language. The other 7% is what? The actual words that you use in your communication. So when you acknowledge that 55% of your communication style comes from body language, wow, how big is that? Posture, gestures, breathing, touch, movement, facial expressions, all of that. Gigantic. And your voice, in terms of inflection, tonality, tempo, volume, vocabulary, that's 38%. So don't we have a big emphasis here that we need to be spending more time on what our voice is and what our body language is, and less time on exactly, specifically, what words are coming out of our mouth? Critical to get this down, because it really works so effectively. In fact, this is some of the reasons I do a lot of three-way calls with people in my pathway class. It's one of the homework assignments that you have in my pathway class is to do at least one three-way call with Mary Jo. And I'm going to tell you, some people, they hear me on a three-way call and they go, that didn't even sound like you. And one of the reasons sometimes it doesn't sound like me is because I'm shifting to mirror or match the person I'm talking to. I don't have to think about it anymore, because for me it just comes like natural, because it's not my agenda. It's how can I be most effective relating to this other person. It's putting the focus on them and off of me, and that's a big issue around a lot of us in our lives, so we just have the focus on the wrong person. It's not about you, it's about who you're talking to, and this is crucial in prospecting as well as building rapport in other arenas where we want to have people jump on our bandwagon to support us with our commitments, our goals, our desires in our life. So building rapport is critical for everything we do in our life, everything. Because truly at the core of everything that we do are people. And if we want to build, you know, we want to have relationships with people, we have to learn to build rapport. So let's first look at voice as one of the concepts. Again, 38% of your communication with others has to do with your voice. And there are four separate aspects of your voice that you can look at separately. Tonality is one. The tone of your speaking is a quality apart from how fast or slow or how quietly or loudly you talk. So you can talk, here are some samples or examples of different tonalities. Somebody gets on the phone with you and they're very excited. If you respond by being very laid back, are you going to be more effective or less effective with them? Right? You're seeing the difference. So if somebody's on the phone with you and they're very excited, you want to try to step up and mirror and match them and be very excited. If somebody comes on the phone with you and they're very dry, then you want to slow down your speech pattern. You don't want to be cracking jokes left and right and laughing and giggling. This is not going to excite them. It's not going to be a mirror matching with them, and they're not going to relate to you very well. Some people are hurried. Some people are enthusiastic. Some people are very thoughtful in their approach. So all of these different things, those are the tone of the person's voice. So it's very important for you to pick up on the tone of the person's voice and then try to emulate that same tone in your conversation with the person. Some of you are always excited, especially my ADD people. They're always, and I'm going, you're going to have very, very little impact on people who are laid back, thoughtful, you know, dry. You're going to lose a whole category, lots of categories of people, because they're not going to be impressed with that kind of excessive excitement and enthusiasm, because that's not where they're coming from. So be very cognizant of the person you're talking to and try to match them, mirror them in terms of their tonality. Second is tempo. Tempo is the speed with which the person's talking. Again, if they're talking very quickly, then you want to talk very quickly back to them. If they're talking very slowly and they sound very deliberate in what they're saying, then you want to slow down your speech pattern, because that's their preference, that's their style. They will be more receptive to hearing what you say when you match their style. Volume, like tempo, is self-explanatory. If somebody on the phone with you or meeting you for lunch is speaking very softly, you want to tone down yours. You can reduce the volume in your voice. It's very simple. Or you can increase the volume. When somebody's really loud, you can be loud back. It's you are re- readily capable of making those shifts. And some of you are doing this automatically without even knowing it, because you've learned by experience that it's the most effective way to build rapport with people. And it is absolutely crucial that you learn these things. The last one, the fourth level of your voice, is what we call vocabulary. And vocabulary, some people say, well, how can that be necessary? What does that really mean? Well, because vocabulary really kind of tells you, some specific words tell you what the person's orientation tends to be. So that a person who goes, I think this, you want to shift to I think language in response. Other people might use the word I feel. So they become, a totally different vocabulary usage, and it tells a little bit different about the person's creative orientation. So if you find somebody saying, well, I feel this, you want to shift into language like that. Another one would be I see, or I hear what you're saying. So although you may be a thinker, I think, when you're with some of those that are feeling people, you want to become a feeling person. Does that make some sense to all of you? It's a good shift and a good exercise, and start practicing again, but you have to be a great listener to hear what people are saying to you in order to make that shift. So you better be listening to what the other person is. So that's kind of a shift in vocabulary. One of the examples he wrote in his book about vocabulary usage was, I don't know if you know that Peter Hirsch went to law school, he's a lawyer, and of course I could relate to that. He took his first exam in his tort class, and he just knew he aced it. He came out of the exam, he knew all the material, he just said, I aced it. He got his exam back and he got a C-. So what he did next, because he knew the material, he didn't understand why he got a C-. So the next thing he did before the next exam, he went out and he read everything his professor ever had written. So he saw the kind of language the professor used or chose to use in the way he described and discussed things and discussed cases and all that. And when he took his next exam in the same class, what do you think happened? Exactly. He got an A+ on the exam. Why? Because he was communicating in the same vocabulary, the language that the professor preferred to use. So words are really important, so be cognizant of that. You know, what is the person's creative orientation? Feelers, thinkers, seers, where are they coming from? And relate to them at their level. Another thing we always talk about in terms of building rapport is, of course, listening is your most important skill. It's your most important skill because by listening to people, that's how much you show you care. And I always preach and teach this all the time, that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And the number one way we show how much we care for somebody is by being a great listener. So put some real energy around listening to other people. Get off of your agenda and step into their agenda and support them. You have to also ask the right questions. And, of course, Debbie Jones is really big in this. That's part of her training that she just got out in the marketplace of how to be effective in prospecting. She talks about asking questions. And it's about asking open-ended questions, not closed-ended questions. So if somebody goes to a training, you don't go, did you like the training, Bob? Well, what's Bob's answer going to be, yes or no? It's not going to bring any new insight into your relationship with them. It's just going to be a yes-no answer. It's a closed-end question, and it's a closed-end response. So you're not going to grow or learn anything by asking closed-end questions. So how could I ask a question differently to make it open-ended about Bob attending a training? How about this? Bob, what was the best part of the training for you? Now, there is an open-ended question. And it works the same way with you guys calling people back after you send them materials in Manatech. Don't ask them, did you like what you read? Don't ask them yes-no questions. Yes-no questions are closed-ended questions. Ask them questions like, well, Sarah, I know you got the materials. Have you had a chance to read them? And she'll say, yeah, Mary Jo, I did get a chance to read them. I said, well, could you just describe to me some of the things that you read about that really fascinated you and the things that you looked at? And she goes, yeah, I really wanted to talk to you about such and such. And you get it? I'm asking her to describe things that she found that were fascinating for her when she read or listened to the materials I sent her around glyconutrients. That puts the whole conversation on a very positive note, but it also is open-ended, so I can find out more about what she's interested in, what she liked best, what made sense for her, so I can respond to her, not be on my agenda. It is about her, not you, okay? So hopefully all this helps not only in just getting people to jump on the bandwagon, building rapport with them in terms of getting people to support you in your desires, that you have a support network, But all of this building rapport information, I think, is awesome in terms of how to be the best prospector you can be, because building that rapport is so crucial. And it's about asking those open-ended questions to find more information. And the last quote I put at the bottom of the outline that came out of his book was, if you give people time and attention, if you listen to their desires, they will open up to you. They will come into partnership with you in a combined effort to achieve all your goals as well as theirs. Okay, is everybody back? Everybody back yet? I'm seeing if I can get back online. Hey, there we go. Yeah, now I can hear you. Good. Okay, did this help anybody? Anyone have any feedback on the talk today? Anyone? Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Any specific thing that really struck you in the information this morning? Uh-huh. Hi, Helen. Oh, great. She totally shifted. Yep. Oh, yeah, I felt it. Thanks, Helen. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, she was trying to get her daughter, who had looked at Manitech, 8 years ago and never got started in the business, to really take a serious look at it. And in the conversation, she totally shifted. She was really resistant. You know, I sensed a little resistance around it when we started. Yeah, a lot. She said, see, I don't even give credit. I tend to give no validity to it, but I sensed her resistance. By the time we were done, she was like on fire. Yeah, it was wonderful. Thanks. Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah, cool. Thanks, Ellen. Well, thank you. Yeah, that's the importance of three-way calls. And, of course, meeting somebody where they are. That was a perfect example of me mirroring and matching and being where she was in her life to try to bring her forward. Yeah, great. Uh-huh. I'm sorry? You bet. Absolutely. Yeah. And really trying to be with them. It's kind of a be with, as I call it, a be with listening pattern, a be with conversational pattern. Be in their quadrants, be in their tonality, be in their, just be who they are. Try to just step into having tremendous empathy for where they are in life. And then you'll start using language that matches for them, that really brings it soundly to where they are to move forward in their life. Absolutely. See?